also understanding the nature of your product and also the market well, I think also helps a lot in ensuring that you can get to that PMF faster.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of How to Product, a podcast series on product management brought to you by PM School, and I'm your host, Arjav Jain. On this episode, we're going to talk about the journey to product market fit and look at a story closer to home in India, the story of Meesho. We talk about what an MVP is, a minimum viable product, how to define an MVP, how to move from an MVP to a V1, and eventually get to product market fit. This one promises to be a banger. If you want to step into the shoes of a product manager, do check out pmschool.io for their live program and product case challenges. Without further ado, let's jump into the episode. I have with me today an amazing guest, Kirti Varun. Kirti leads product management, design, and user research functions for Meesho and is part of the executive leadership team. He's responsible for the overall product vision, strategy, execution, and user experience. Kirti has 14 plus years of strategy consulting, operations, and product leadership experience with stints across Amazon, Flipkart, and McKinsey. He did his undergrad from IIT Madras and MBA from the Indian School of Business, Hyderabad. Welcome to the show, and thank you so much for joining us, Kirti.
Hey, thanks a lot, Arjav, for having me here, and looking forward to this conversation.
Same here. Lots to talk about. So, firstly, congratulations. I think App Annie reported Meesho to be in the top apps for 2021 in the e-commerce space, along with the likes of Flipkart and Amazon. Right. So, congrats for that.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And I think, all of the accolades have been a function of, I think, the entire company being focused on our mission, which is around democratizing internet commerce for everyone. And I think the last year particularly has been particularly exciting for us with all the growth that we've seen. So yeah, I think a good time for us at this point.
For sure, but I'm sure the journey to this point wasn't easy, and you've had multiple iterations to find product market fit. I'll get to PMF, but I want to start with something more basic, and I want to talk about the MVP, right? And I want to understand from you as to how should product managers look at an MVP. What is the definition of an MVP according to you?
Sure. I think that's a good place to start with. I think this term MVP, which I think refers to minimum viable product, also is sort of used in lots of different contexts. And typically, people also have different notions of what it means. So I'll maybe try to talk about how I've looked at it in my career and in some of the experiences I've had.
Sure.
To me, I think MVP is almost like the minimum version or the smallest version of a product that you want to build to test some key hypothesis of the value you want this product to deliver to the customer. Right. So to me, that I think is probably the very basic and simplest way to define what MVP is.
Very beautifully put. So minimum version of a product that you build to test out some key hypothesis, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. So to put things in context, right? What according to you would be an MVP for Meesho, let's say?
Sure. I think that's a good question. And I'll maybe give two different examples here. I think one is maybe dating back to actually when Meesho was a very early stage company. Mm-hmm. This could go back to like 2016, 17. And I will also give another example of a new business line called Farmisho that we have started last year, which is also in that sort of 0 to 1 phase. So I think in both, we've had some experience with building MVPs and scaling.
Mm-hmm.
So if I go back to the original Meesho days, I think at that time, the core insight that the founders had was that there were a lot of these small retail shop owners who were engaging with their customers over WhatsApp, right? To basically tell them what products are available in their shop and what's mm-hmm. the price, and so that they can sort of provide that visibility to customers and get them to come and buy, right? Mm-hmm. So that was something that they had observed. Along with that, what they also had observed was there were people who were doing this kind of a WhatsApp-based communication with customers. And these people didn't even have physical retail stores, right?
Okay.
So these were people who we later call them resellers and so on. So a lot of people were sort of doing that. But the biggest problem for these kinds of people was, how do you source the supply? Like, even if a customer on WhatsApp tells you that, hey, I want to buy a particular item that you're sharing a picture of, how do you sort of actually source it and give it to them and, mm-hmm. and so on? So I think that sort of was the core problems that the founders had identified. And they also believed that if there is a company that can solve this problem, mm-hmm. then this so-called social commerce, as it came to be later on,
right,
can be a very big, big opportunity in the country. Right? So I think that sort of was the initial insight. Mm-hmm. And now to actually validate whether you can build a product, a minimum viable product, which can test this hypothesis, which is that if you do provide a platform which solves for the supply side for these resellers, mm-hmm. then this business can grow big and be a large opportunity. Right? That was the key
okay.
hypothesis that they were testing. And therefore, the MVP, actually the first MVP, was not even like a full-fledged product. It was actually a way of getting a bunch of customers on WhatsApp groups,
okay.
where you had a reseller who was sharing items, and then so organizing this group was one part of the product, so to say.
Okay.
No new technology, but just a way to ensure that one reseller is able to reach out to multiple such customers, and then once they share some items, then customers can sort of express interest then privately through a direct WhatsApp message with that reseller, right?
Okay.
So I think that was one part. The second part of the product, which again was again very, very minimum, was basically getting a sense from these resellers on which all customers are interested in buying that product and at what price. And for that, again, it was more of those us connecting with those resellers, getting that information on the products, price, and also how much quantity that customer wants to order, almost literally mm-hmm. in like an Excel sheet type thing.
Okay.
Right. And then partnering with delivery partners to ensure that they get shipped to that customer's address. Right. So that was a really, really minimum version of Meesho.
Right. Okay?
And when this was tried out, obviously there was a huge amount of traction. And then the founders then started building a slightly more sophisticated version of this MVP, right? Which was like, sort of an app where all of these items are visible, where you can sort of place an order, etc., instead of trying to do all this over an Excel sheet. But even and even you could share from to a customer as a reseller a item on the app directly over WhatsApp by integrating with WhatsApp. So there are okay. that's what sort of the first version of the MVP, right? And so this is sort of the way at least Meesho evolved. And the core point here again is that when you know what the most important hypothesis to test is, figuring out what is the most minimum way to test it, and once you find some traction, then you make it more sophisticated, because obviously once you find a little bit of traction, then a lot of the manual ways of doing things through Excel sheets, etc., all of that breaks down. Yeah?
Right.
So that's the Meesho example. Yeah.
Just to add there, right, and I think just to add on top of what you said, you don't really need to write lines of code or anything to test your hypothesis. You can do it using existing technologies around you, right? And that'll also ensure like a faster turnaround, in my opinion.
Absolutely. And I think the way at least technology has advanced, this example I was giving was in 2015-16.
Right.
But if you look at today, there are so many no-code tools available.
Exactly.
That you can actually build a much more sophisticated MVP even without sort of writing custom code, right? And the idea here always is about testing identifying the most risky hypothesis and figuring out the most minimum way to test it. Because and the reason why we want to be very minimal here is because there's very high likelihood that either you identified the wrong hypothesis or after you tested it, it is not valid at all.
Right.
If you spend too much time building something and coming to this conclusion, then you have both wasted time and resources.
That's true.
So I think that's sort of the essence of MVP from the Meesho example. I think the other example I can talk about, this is more recent, this was actually last year,
mm-hmm.
when we were building Meesho. And Meesho is actually a unique new business line. So this is community group buying for groceries. Yeah.
Okay.
So here our attempt was to figure out how do we tap into the e-grocery market in the country, which obviously mm-hmm. is huge, and grocery is more than 60% of retail consumption in India.
Okay.
So it's a very, very big big market, and also with our mission to democratize internet commerce, I think if you're not going to play in grocery, then we can't achieve that mission.
Right.
So to us, it was very clear that we should take a stab at it, but how to do it and so on, again, there were a lot of open questions. So here, if I talk again about the hypothesis we were trying to test, I think one of the realizations we had after looking at the competitive landscape in India is, I think the metro and maybe a little bit of tier one audience, especially the mid to high income audience in these mm-hmm. Geographies, was actually fairly well served,
okay.
right? In terms of grocery, right? You have Big Basket and a bunch of others getting into it. So it was a crowded market.
Right.
And what we wanted to do, and once we sort of did a little bit of understanding of the market and users, is there is a big white space in if you go to tier two and beyond. Right. Their almost entire grocery consumption is offline. So online penetration is close to 0%.
Oh, okay.
And then when we started understanding the buying habits and so on, we realized that there is an opportunity again to convert some of that offline consumption to online. But the value proposition has to be very strong. Because in most of these geographies, I think the store from which you buy your vegetables or other grocery items is literally very close to your house.
Right.
Right. So even the convenience that typically e-commerce would offer also doesn't exist, right? Because
right.
it's available very close
That's
by.
True.
And you also know that retailer by name, sometimes that person gives you credit to buy things. So those were some reasons because of which the behavior was fairly entrenched.
Correct. There are like personal connections, right? Yeah. There are personal connections Correct. That people have in smaller cities. And you know, even if they have to travel sometime, they will go to their preferred shop and do it. Right.
Exactly right, and this behavior is quite entrenched across the country, and then we said, okay, if we have to change this behavior, then what can be the value proposition that we can offer, right? And how can we test that? So I think after again some brainstorming, etc., and user understanding, we came to the conclusion that even in this sort of this market, if you have a very strong pricing proposition coupled with some human connect, right? Even in a e-commerce type setting, then that can actually disrupt this market. So that was sort of our hypothesis, which means that even though you're buying low value grocery items, which are largely commoditized, but if somebody else is selling it cheaper, then people will shift to that. And because it is commoditized, it's easier for them to shift.
Right. Yeah?
So how can we offer something at a structurally lower price? And second is also, how do we build some of this human connect, which exists through in the offline world, also in the online world. So those were some things that we had taken away, and we said, okay, let's figure out if we can solve this and how can we solve this, right? And that's when we went into building out this first sort of MVP. And again, the characteristics here were about saying that, look, how do we offer a very lightweight sort of interface for customers to be able to sort of look at the items they want to buy and play and place an order. So we actually created like a very lightweight website. We didn't even create an app.
Okay.
It was a website. And also there we introduced this middleman who we internally call a champion, right? So it's called a Meesho champion. So this person is equivalent to a retailer type person. And this person is in charge of acquiring these customers and also servicing them in some sense. So telling them when their order will come,
okay.
sometimes going and delivering it in their house, right? So a bunch of those kinds of things, right? So we introduced this intermediary, and then we created this website. So this was the MVP.
Okay.
And then we sort of launched this, again, we saw, we initially actually didn't see much traction. Then we iterated a little bit on the profile of that person we call the champion. Mm-hmm. And then we sort of found some product market fit, so to say, as we call it. Right. And then we started making this more sophisticated. So we then built an app, and then we also created a much stronger set of transaction flows on it, and so on. So again, that has evolved. And now right. this Farmishow business is scaling very rapidly. And I think soon we'll be among the top e-grocery players in the country.
Awesome. I loved how you broke it down into, hey, you know, we did market research. We then figured out what is that core hypothesis that you want to build. Built a very lightweight interface, and then iterated on top of that, and then found product market fit, right? With an example that's close to your heart. Now, I want to talk about what indicators do you look for when you want to start moving from an MVP to a V1 and then beyond that?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. And I think at the MVP stage, the point which tells you whether to sort of move ahead to make a significant change mm-hmm. to the product, that point we typically call product market fit. And this is a term coined by folks in Silicon Valley that we've also adopted here. And this term is also like understood differently by different people.
Correct.
But in essence, I think if I had to again define it very simplistically, I think product market fit basically is a stage when your product is delivering value consistently to a sizable cohort of customers.
Okay. Right?
So, and three things here are important to understand. I think one is delivering value. Second is consistently. Third is sizable cohort of customers.
Right.
So delivering value, again, this is sort of the more obvious thing, which is it truly fulfilling the customer need? Is it solving a pain point? Or is it giving them a reason to pay money to buy something which they probably didn't even know as a need earlier? And right. value can come in different forms. But delivering value, I think, is the most important thing.
Right.
Second is consistency. And this is also very critical because this indicates things like retention, which is are customers coming back to you again,
right,
as opposed to buying once from you. So if a lot of customers buy once from you, that actually is not a indication of product market fit. You need repetitive nature or that consistency right. in customers sort of coming back. And the third part is a sizable cohort. And this is also important because if you build something which only 10 customers like, but they like it very much,
right,
and you can't find another 10 like that anywhere else, then obviously you will struggle to scale. And
that's true.
And therefore you would want to find a sizable cohort, right? Which means that you would want to describe the cohort in a manner in which there are more such people elsewhere in the country or whatever you call your market. And you have some confidence that I can actually scale because there are more of these people who are finding value with my current MVP.
Makes
so
sense.
I think all of these three things, when they fall into place, I think is when you can call it product market fit. But also this is a bit subjective, Arjun,
right.
okay. in the sense that like I haven't seen a single metric anywhere which can say that you have product market fit or not. But maybe there are two things which are good to look at, which is what I think at least I've seen in my personal experience. I think one metric is a leading metric, other is more a lagging metric. I think the leading metric for any product market fit typically tends to be some version of customer satisfaction, NPS, that kind of a metric.
Right.
Do customers love your product? Not just like, but do they love your product? And do they right. love your product on dimensions where truly your product is unique compared to others in the market, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I go back to that Farmishow example, like if when we did the NPS study with customers, we realized that they were truly liking the low pricing that we were offering. They were truly liking the support of that champion that I spoke about. And these right. were our differentiators.
Right.
Not the fast delivery or good quality. Those are all things that even other players are offering. So
that's
to
true.
Some extent. So I think that's sort of one, to me, that's the best leading indicator.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's also a lagging indicator, which I think is more quantitative, which is retention.
Right.
And you typically look at this by cohorts, which is people who, for example, in the Farmisho case, when it's grocery, and it's a very regular use case, right? You buy grocery very regularly. So what we were looking at was actually weekly retention, which is if a customer bought something this week, then out of all of those customers, how many are buying something else again next week?
Yep.
It is a weekly retention. So that actually is a very strong indicator of PMF. But only thing is, depending on your nature of the business, this will take time to mature.
Exactly.
So it is easy to look at this in grocery. But if suppose hypothetically you are building a online travel portal where you're selling flight tickets.
Hmm.
So looking at retention is tough because people buy flight tickets only thrice a year.
That's true. Yeah.
So you have to wait for a while to even for this data to mature. So in that case, because it's a lagging indicator, you look at some leading indicators like NPS satisfaction. So to me, I think this sort of is probably the way I have at least looked at product market fit.
Yep. And in fact, I was watching a Y Combinator video on PMF, right? And in addition to the two metrics that you mentioned, the third metric that he mentioned was also on sort of paying customers coming back, which is a form of retention. But in the context of the app that they were talking about, he mentioned, hey, if you're getting paying customers who are coming back, then that's another metric that you can add to figuring out, hey, if you've achieved PMF or not. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So what's the process to find PMF? And if you can speak in the context of, let's say, Misho or Famisho, how did you go about finding your PMF? Right? What are some steps that you took in the process that sort of stood out or you did differently and helped you find that PMF?
Sure. And I think my answer will probably surprise you, Arjav, in the sense that actually there is no process here. And actually, this is one of those things where it's probably the most chaotic and messy part of building products, right?
Right.
Because once, if you want to scale a product, you know, take it from 1 to 10, 10 to N, I think there are playbooks, there are ways to do it.
Right.
But 0 to 1, I think, is a stage, which is basically the finding PMF stage, is one which is extremely chaotic and messy in the sense that you don't know what approach to take. Having said that, I think there are some general principles to keep in mind, which maybe I can sort of talk about again from experience doing this. I think one is you need to have people working on this product, and these people typically at the early stage of the company are just the founders and maybe some other folks along with them.
Okay.
I think, but you need people who have a very high sort of open-mindedness and also bias for iteration and experimentation.
Okay.
I think this to me is probably one of the most important things to get right, because many times every exercise in finding product market fit is not linear. While I may have described it succinctly to you earlier, but in reality, there is a lot of back and forth. You try something, it doesn't work. You try something else. You're tweaking the product constantly. Right. And at that stage, I think you just need people with that mindset who probably don't care about whether this succeeds or fails, but they derive their sort of energy and joy just from iterating and experimenting. So I think that's sort of probably one very important thing to keep in mind, that you need the right kind of people with the right mindset to achieve PMF. I think that's number one.
Right.
I think the second is also having a very strong connect with the customers you're trying to serve.
Okay.
And while this in general is true at all stages of the company, here I think it is even more important and even more critical for this to happen more directly.
Okay.
Which means you, the founder or the product manager who's building this, actually is talking to customers directly and very regularly. Mm-hmm. And not just depending on things like surveys and other things to get inputs, right? Because here the product itself is so unformed, it's very raw. And some of these customers also that you're trying to serve, they also have no vested interest in your product because they've never used it. They don't even probably care about responding to your survey. So if you just depend on a slightly hands-off way of understanding customers through surveys or research teams or whatever, I think it will be a challenge. So this has to be very, very hands-on. Literally founders, product managers talking to customers, and that has to be a very significant part of the time that you spend, right? So I think that to me is the second most important thing.
Okay.
And the third principle is also around trying out new ideas in the sense that almost disconfirming your own hypotheses, right? Which means that you may have a certain view of the market saying, look, if I do this, then it would work. For example, in the Fahmy showcase, we believe that, look, if pricing is a value proposition, having this champion is a value proposition, and this is what is going to disrupt the market.
Right.
But for example, if we found from some experiments that is not the case, then being open to actually changing this hypothesis or finding a new hypothesis
yep.
is very important. So being open-minded as opposed to being rigid, right? So I think that to me also is a very important sort of aspect which
Definitely.
Sometimes some people yeah. struggle with, because they're almost like, look, I know the answer, so I will try everything to make it work.
Yeah.
You should try, but like when to also change perspectives, I think
right.
is an important thing. And for example, in the Fahmy showcase, if I rewind back to even before last year,
mm-hmm.
so the very first view that we had of the market was actually to serve the metro type audience.
Okay.
And we were thinking that this audience is underserved. Right.
Uh-huh.
And then we sort of did a bunch of understanding research, and we also sort of built like a very lightweight type, I wouldn't even call it product, but more like a mock-up type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got feedback, and then we realized that actually our hypothesis was completely wrong. And we need to be open-minded to actually sort of changing it. And that's when we went into the tier two beyond markets, which was a much tougher problem to solve. But we also realized that that's where the opportunity lies. There's
right.
no point in trying to sort of be very rigid-minded about your hypothesis. So I think so the reason I was talking about this is to illustrate the point that I think being open-minded here, I think, is one of the most important things. The other one I also sort of realized over a period of time is about also understanding the nature of your product and also the market well, I think also helps a lot
mm-hmm.
in ensuring that you can get to that PMF faster. Right? So I'll
right.
give you some examples. So, and I've written about this in the past as well. So if you look at the nature of the product, typically almost every product is of two types.
Okay.
There are products which are like vitamins. There are products which are painkillers.
Right.
right. So painkillers are products which are solving acute pain points of customers which already exist, and customers realize those pain points.
Right.
For example, like the classic example to look at here is Uber. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So when they launched, the getting a taxi in a metro city was an acute pain point.
Right.
Everybody realized it. So when Uber came in, they found product market fit also very fast, because it was a painkiller product. It was not a vitamin. It was not a good to have. It was almost a must have. Whereas on the other hand, you have vitamin products. So almost every Apple product is a vitamin product.
True.
Right. So from sort of the music to iPhone to everything else, AirPods, right?
Right.
Almost all of them, there are a lot of alternatives that already exist in the market. So the only reason why somebody would go for this is because this product is sort of very differentiated, insanely great, Steve Jobs used to put it.
Yep.
So I think so it's important for a founder also to get some sense initially, or the PM who's working, to understand what is the nature of the product they're building. Is it painkiller? Is it vitamin? Accordingly, they'll have to think about how much differentiation is needed in it or not, right? Because if it's a painkiller product, then even with little differentiation, it will catch on.
Right.
Right. Whereas if it's a vitamin product, then it requires a lot of significant differentiation. And sometimes this differentiation may be needed at the MVP stage itself.
Right.
Right. For you. And that's where I think some of the regular rules on what an MVP should be also get changed based on the nature of the product. I think understanding this is probably one big thing also
mm-hmm.
I feel is important. And the second one is also understanding the market dynamics, which is understanding of, for example, who are the competitors, whether your product is a completely new to market type product.
Right.
Or is it something like better than an alternative which already sort of exists. So I think just understanding the nature of the product, nature of the market also is one very important thing to keep in mind as you sort of approach finding PMFs. So these are the different things I would summarize.
Yeah, very beautifully put. So you need to have people who have sort of high open-mindedness, they have bias to experiment and iterate. And you mentioned it's the most chaotic and messy part. And my personal anecdote here is it's also the most fun part. At least that's what I enjoy the most, right? Having that 0 to 1 done. Having a strong connection with customers you're trying to serve is the second thing that you said. Trying out new ideas and being open to disconfirming your own hypothesis, right? And then understanding the nature of the product and the market, which will then decide, hey, what differentiating factors you need, and can then have sort of different timelines for PMF, right? Very beautifully put, Kirti. Thank you for that. So before you go, please do leave us, our listeners, with tips to rise and shine in the product role.
Sure. I think this is one of the most, one of the questions I get asked the most often.
Yep.
And I think, so there are many ways to approach product management careers, and product managers also are expected to have lots of skills.
Right.
So what at least I'll try to maybe talk about is, like, what are the characteristics of a PM role? How is it different from other roles? And therefore, what probably are the skills that matter the most, right?
Sure, yeah.
Which people can sort of think about. I think to me, I think there are three unique characteristics of a PM role relative to maybe any other role in a technology-led company.
Okay.
So one is product management is a multifunctional role.
Okay.
Which means inherently more generalist than specialist, right?
Right.
So you need to know enough about engineering, you need to know enough about design, business, data, etc., etc. So it's a little bit of the jack of all trades,
right?
And less a master of one, right? So and that's the nature of the role. I think it's important to keep that in mind. Second thing, which is unique, is also that it is actually the highest leverage role in any technology company.
Okay.
When I say highest leverage, what I mean is one product manager creates work for 15 other people in the company, which also means that they create the maximum impact on a per employee level, if you look at it, right?
Yeah.
So, and this is very clear from the way product management is. You have a PM, you'll have a couple of designers, you'll have 5 to 10 engineers, you'll have some business marketing folks. Like, all of this is a team that is building something, and what they're building creates impact.
Right.
So the PM role is very high leverage. I think that's the other very unique thing about product management. I think the third one, which I think is the thing that most people readily understand and appreciate, is the fact that this is a very high influence over authority type role.
Yeah.
Which means most product managers don't have any people reporting to them. Even people who are product leaders, who are slightly senior, like a director of product, also have smaller teams.
Correct.
When you compare them to other functions, which means that almost everything that they do has to be driven by cross-functional influence. So, so I think these are the three unique traits or unique characteristics of the product role. And with this in mind, I think the way I look at the skills, and this is the advice I give to most young PMs, is three things matter the most here. Mm-hmm. I think one is generalist problem solving skills. And this is because the role is more multifunctional as opposed to specialist.
Right.
Which means that you need to be able to solve problems in different kinds of sort of domains that come up, which means you need to have strong generalist sort of problem solving, analytical type skills. So, and ultimately, building any product is ultimately about solving a problem.
That's right.
So I think this is probably the one biggest thing for people early in their career to understand and also hone as a skill, which means they can put themselves in different situations, solve different kinds of problems, and automatically they can learn and get better.
Mm-hmm.
And the second sort of skill, going back to the influence over authority point I mentioned, is communication collaboration, right? So you need to be someone who can work well with people, right? And working well also here is has multiple dimensions. So it's not about getting along well, that is important, but it's also about knowing how to inspire and push people to get things done.
Right.
It is also about supporting, encouraging them when things are not going. So there are multiple angles to this. And to be able to do all this, I think requires a certain set of soft skills around communication, collaboration, which again, spending time to hone this in different settings is hugely valuable for anybody young in their career, because this will sort of help them succeed in the long term.
Mm-hmm.
I think the third important skill, and this is actually not really a skill, maybe it's more a mindset, is what I call sort of drive and ownership.
Okay.
And this is actually like more like a foundational block, which is PMs need to have very high drive and ownership, purely because their job is very hard, right?
Right.
So this is not an easy role, and you will invariably face a lot of challenges. So people who can be very resilient, people who can sort of continue to drive outcomes,
mm-hmm.
even amidst challenges, also they need to be like the benchmark for energy and drive in the entire team. Right. So they need to sort of drive, motivate everybody else. Right. So that's why I think this element is super critical. And all of the very successful PMs that I've seen in my teams over a period of time, almost always spiked on this more than anything else. And just the drive, the ambition to be successful, irrespective of what challenges come their way.
Right. Kiti, I love the clarity of thought that you have, and there was so much to take away from this conversation. So thank you for your time. And and I'm sure our listeners will benefit greatly from this. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Arjav, for having me. I think it's super interesting to have this conversation and share some insights from what I've learned with all of our audience. So yeah, good to be here.
Awesome. Thank you, Kiti.
Kiti has so much to offer, and this episode was full of key takeaways. The example of Farmy Show and how they went about building it really put things in context. I hope this helped all of you to understand what product market fit is and how to get there. If you liked what you heard, please give us a rating on Spotify and share it with your friends and colleagues. If you're interested in solving product case challenges or experiencing what a PM does by stepping into the shoes of a product manager in a live program, you should check out pmschool.io. We'll be back with another one very soon. Until then, stay curious and stay safe. This is your host, Arjav Jain, signing off.